Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Stephen Guyon with EA Davidson. Hope you all this afternoon. With us today is Private Bancorp CFO Kevin Killips and the investor relations Jeanette Laughlin. With that introduction, very short introduction, give it off to or pass it off to Kevin and let him jump in.
Hi, thanks everybody for joining the call, and thanks for DA Davidson for hosting us in Portland today. Thanks for good meetings, and thanks for taking the time, everybody. Thanks to the firm. Before we start, just a brief overview. We tend not in these visits, non-deal roadshows, to go through the detailed presentation with some history. But since this is our first visit with Davidson and to this part of the country, I thought a little history will be helpful, and I promise we'll go through that very quickly, hit some key points, and then hopefully open up for questions from the floor and also from the participants. So with Jeanette, would you take us through our forward-looking statement?
Sure. Kind of as we begin, I need to remind you that future results may differ from any forward-looking statements that we may make during this presentation. And we remind you to look at the risks and factors which could cause actual results to differ that we identified on page 2 for slides and in our most recent periodic and current reports filed with the SEC.
So now that we're legal, why don't we take a look at the document that I think was supplied to everybody, you know, focusing on page 3. The long and short of it, Private Bank is a financially focused bank that spends the majority of its time, probably about 75% of our business is out of the Chicagoland team, which does not necessarily mean the Chicagoland area. As of today, we serve middle market clients, the owners, the entrepreneurs, the executives, and their families. We also have a modest-sized retail business through acquisitions that we've made in the greater Chicagoland area that serves those communities and those businesses as such as they are. Our differentiator, and I think our key theme here, is that this is a high-touch business. We have products and services that play well to the mid-cap, mid-market business model, and therefore we think that those serve our clients very well. Key data, assets are now over $15 billion, loans over $11 billion, deposits close to $13 billion, with a market cap as of the 24th at $2.5 billion.
Footprint, we have 34 offices in 10 states, primarily in the U.S., with, as Kevin mentioned, the majority of the business conducted in the greater Chicago market. The Chicago metropolitan statistical area is the third largest metropolitan economy in the U.S. Within that MSA, Private Bancorp is the third largest independent Chicago-based real estate holding company. Almost 75% of our revenue comes from Chicago-based commercial and commercial real estate banking team, which includes our specialty businesses, which are national in scope. We have a retail banking network of 25 branches located mostly in Chicago, which gives us deposit generation and brand awareness. We also primarily serve businesses through our footprint in key Midwestern markets through strong concentrations of middle market businesses like St. Louis, Milwaukee, and Detroit. As the majority of our business is conducted in Chicago, let's take a minute to talk about the real estate. The U.S. is third largest city in the diversified economy sector. Professional services, health services, manufacturing, transportation, and distribution. It has a young and growing workforce of almost 60% of the workforce under the age of 44. Chicago attracts its share of highly qualified workers, and top management salaries, in many cases, exceed the U.S. average. Here at the bank, we are seeing the Chicago and Midwest economic activity improving at a moderate rate. We continue to see improving client sentiment and overall solid performance from and prospects. As they have more confidence, they are considering more ways to grow and make investments in their business. This leads to more opportunities for us, and we are getting more looks at deals. We are optimistic on the business climate and opportunities with a somewhat cautious outlook driven by some macro geopolitical and economic events.
So here's where my promise of a history lesson here, and I think it's kind of important because there's some unique factors to this, at least from my perspective. It's really a tale of two cities here. The first part, 89 through 07, and then 07 through the present. In 1989, the bank was formed de novo by our
Chairman Emeritus, and Board Member Ralph Mandel. Ralph spent his entire career developing banking businesses, and in the early 80s, in the Cleveland area, did a roll-up of banks as the state laws changed, and then sold those to a much bigger Chicago player. As he kind of pondered his fate while he was on garden leave, he decided that he wanted to build a bank that served private clients and wealthy the individuals in much the same way that the grand banks of Europe, Julius Baer, and some of those other ones served clients in on the continent. So hence the name Private Bank. So the bank was opened, and developing that client base, did a number of capital raises, and went public in 99. And then, as you can see, we continued to build that capital base. During that time, 19 locations with some de novos and some acquisitions, and we operated the enterprise at that time under five separate charters. That's important. And then last but not least, using the model of things like that, Julius Baer in Switzerland as a model. So if you go to the next page, which is page 8, I think this is where it gets a little more interesting, at least from my perspective. In Chicago at that time, there were really two big players. One was J.P. Morgan, or by its earlier iterations of First Chicago, First Chicago, National Bank of Detroit, and Bank One. So Bank One, coming out of First National Bank of Chicago, was really the biggest bank in Chicago. LaSalle Bank, which was a historic bank in Chicago for over 100 years, was bought by the Dutch banking giant ABN back in 78. And then it quietly grew from a very small basis to, at 206, about $120 billion in assets. It was viewed as a local operation, highly profitable, with either the one or two market shares in Chicago between it and J.P. Morgan / for Chicago. As many of you may or may not know, in 07, ABN AMRO was thinking about strategic alliances, and then there was a corporate attack on ABN by RBS. RBS was interested in certain parts of ABN, one of them being LaSalle, which was a very profitable middle market bank. Instead of going that route, the ABN people in Amsterdam sold LaSalle to Bank America. Not that unusual, because a lot of things were going on at that time, and Bank America was trying to fill out the market space. The interesting thing we have here is that Larry Richmond, who's our current CEO and then the CEO of LaSalle Bank, and head of commercial banking, felt that that was probably not a good choice for him and the client-facing people. They wanted to do things that were more attuned to working with clients, moving the needle, if you will, and being part of a large organization was probably not on the card for him. At the same time, Private Bank was thinking about their succession plans as our chairman was heading to a point where he wanted to think about doing different things and wanted to take advantage of this opportunity. So given that unique confluence of events, about 100-plus people, including Larry, came over to Private Bank in the 07, early 08 timeframe. A very unusual situation where you had ostensibly a market leader in a large market take essentially his rainmaking team, for lack of a better word, and come over to the smaller platform. On top of that, certain members of the Chicago business community, led by GTCR, which is a very large private equity firm in Chicago, put their support forward. And at that time, in subsequent capital raises, had about a 12% position in the company. I mention that because over the last month, GTCR has now extracted themselves totally out of Private Bank. They had a board seat with one of their partners who was an excellent board member, but as they sold their position and not liquidated, he's now resigned, and that is very typical what we saw from banks being capitalized by private equity kind of pre-crisis and during the crisis. Things have gotten to a stage where they reduced their positions over a series of sales, which were very positively viewed by the market. We had great take-up, and in fact, many times the stock rose as they sold. So that worked very well for us. During the same time, the financial crisis hit. The financial crisis hit Private Bank very hard. we had that whole group of bones that was really there before the LaSalle guys came across that really, really were in for some puff and choppy waters. So if we go through the cycle of 09, 010, and 11, we had a task to clean up that situation, resolve those problem credits, make sure capital was in place. We did a tough capital raise in 09, but at the same time, continue to build out this business. So during that period, we raised $200 million of private equity capital. We did $143 million preferred offering in 08. And then between 08 and 12, we had about $630 million of common shares, part of which took out TARP. We took TARP when everybody else took it. It was kind of the gold standard that immediately kind of went to the scarlet letter, if you will. But that's all in the past. We waited a while to pay that TARP until we believed we got a very strong bid from the regulators. We developed a lot of capital. We had our problems behind us. So we were able to do that, I think, in a very shareholder-friendly way with minimal dilution back in October of 12. During that period, while we were doing all these other things, we did an FDIC deal of about $800 million, a bank called Founders Bank. Worked out extremely well for us as we continued to build that business in the southwest side of Chicago. We added additional development, business development offices, five to be exact, and we also took all those other charters of those banks, collapsed them, moved them into the Chicago centralized back office, centralized control over credit and operational risk. And during that same period, while we were cleaning up the house, we went from about $5 billion in assets to $15.2 at the end of the third quarter, at the same time doubling people from both front, mid, and back office. So a lot of things have happened, but I wanted to make that point to those of you who are new to the story that I'm not sure I've seen something quite like this in my business career, and it was that interesting confluence of events that. So we take a look at page 9. I think we've really talked about this for the most part. Our goal is to really deliver a differentiated approach. Local management in Chicago, our clients understand they're only a phone call or two away from talking to Larry. Larry Richmond is the ultimate client CEO. He sees clients every day. He's interested in clients. He wants to market with clients. And that's what he prefers. I think who controls clients is he who wins. That's my view. And it's a very client-centric organization. Can you go to page 10?
Yeah. So we operate through five lines of business supported by middle office and back office personnel. Our core client is considered a middle market, privately held business with $10 million to $2 billion in annual sales volume. Our Illinois Commercial Banking Group targets primarily Illinois-based middle market clients, with majority of those clients having between $20 to $500 million in revenue. ICD includes the specialty groups, including asset-based lending, healthcare, construction, engineering, and financial institutions, which are national in scope. The National Commercial Banking Group manages middle market commercial banking teams in the markets outside of Illinois, in which we have branch banking operations and our business development offices. Our commercial real estate businesses focus on the needs of CRE professionals, including commercial and residential real estate developers and investors. We provide funding for construction, acquisition, pre-development refinancing, and working capital needs. Our private wealth group offers private banking, trust, and asset management services to individuals with more than $500,000 of investable assets. We focus on cross-selling our private wealth services across our lines of business to the owners and executives of our commercial middle market clients. And our community banking group provides retail, small business, and mortgage lending through our network of branch locations.
Take a look on page 11 of the document. Gives us a little profile of where we've been. We kind of talked about this before. At the end of in 07, a $4 billion book moving into an $8 billion loan book, and then continuing to move on. The 4 to 8 is really a result of the LaSalle guys coming across, bringing their clients, migrating over. I know that people that look at banks look at a 100% growth rate with some level of panic. What I've always said to the street and other investors is that while these clients were new to the private bank, they were not new to the bankers. So these were loans and these were customers that were once in a relationship that followed the bankers as the bankers migrated onto our platform. In the years of 9, 10, 11, loan growth was relatively flat as we faced a fair amount of headwind as we were clearing up and cleaning up the problem loan issues. As we moved clients out, as we sold loans, and we cut off a fair amount of loans, coming then back into 12, 13, and then as we move to 14, I think we're starting to continue to get an approach that we can do overall as we think about the future. The composition of the loan book is very important. Back in 07, 66% of the loan was commercial real estate, with only 19% of the loan being commercial, or what we refer to as C&I. That portfolio has been totally reshaped to where we now have about two-thirds of the book is commercial and C&I, with 26% of the book being commercial real estate. We like that profile, and we believe that that's the profile that we will have on a go-forward basis. As it relates to how the loans are structured and priced, about 96% of the loan portfolio is variable priced. About 73% of the 96% is tied to short-term LIBOR. Now, that's a very, very asset-sensitive balance sheet. The balance sheet was constructed not with a view for asset sensitivity, but with a view of serving our commercial mid-market clients, which for them, the coin of the realm is essentially LIBOR-based pricing. What this tells us is that we have about $6.5 billion of loans that will reprice every 30 days. So even if we get some improvement in the very low 30-day LIBOR that's sitting around 15 or 16 pips, that will catch and reprice within 30 days. So that's very helpful for me. If we turn the page on deposit funding, deposits are the primary funding source in this bank. Banks are managed on the right side of their balance sheet. Deposit gathering and deposit positioning and structuring are very important for us. So we continue to move and continue to have good luck with deposits as we go forward, albeit that we all know that the world is a very liquid place today. One of the things that we really worked on over this time period is the composition of the deposit book. Because of the commercial nature of the book, it's always been heavy towards money markets at 42 and at 41%. But early days, there was very little DDA. That was 8% of the deposit book. That's now moved to 26%. 26% deposit is a good number. We'd like that to grow. We believe that based on our analysis, about 75% of our commercial clients use one type of treasury management or cash management product across the board. So we have a 75% penetration into the cash management or treasury management product that helps drive deposits. If we take a look at page 13, we talked a lot about the credit trials and tribulations and the choppy water that we face. I think these statistics will tell us that those issues are largely resolved. Credit coverage has played itself out. I draw your attention to the top box on the far right, which looks at the relationship of non-performing loans to total loans. We're at 0.6%. It doesn't quite frankly get that much, too much better from there. So we believe that we hit really a strong spot or a low spot in terms of credit issues, and we think we'll continue to move forward from there. So we like where we are from a credit perspective. I think that as the future develops, credit and provisioning will be very driven, all things being equal, by the growth in the loan book. We believe that the credit problems of the past have been sorted through, and the credit leverage has manifested itself for the most part. Page 14, just a quick walkthrough of where we are. We ended up the third quarter of 14 with net income of about $40 million and change. Diluted EPS of 51 cents. Provision of 3 in net revenue and operating profit of 148 and 70 respectively. If we do the walk across year over year, fairly substantial up movements in net income and EPS. and very substantial down movements in where we like it, provision for loan losses, going from 7.8 to 3.7. And then operating profit also moving up over that same year-to-year period at 11%. So we're fairly pleased with this performance as we kind of get what I would say really get on our front foot. Key performance metrics on page 15, what we talk about there results in return on average assets of moving to about 110, and then a return on average common equity of 11.7. All good that these have been achieved now in a very low interest rate environment. So the way we're playing this game, which segues into my next page, is that given this low environment, given the pricing, somewhat pricing pressure that we still feel, but clearly given a 15 or 16 bit short LIBOR, it's important for us to continue to build net interest income by building loans. So over the last year, or the last 2 years, we continue to have good success on building the book out, and for the most part, the build of the book comes through capturing market share. Our utilization of revolving loans has been relatively flat for the last few quarters, 2 percentage points up, percentage point down, but where we've been growing the book is by taking market share. Fee income for us, sitting around 20% of total revenue, we're continuing to work on that and build that up. But our products and services are really tied into our commercial clients. As we develop those, as things improve, and clients become more active, we'll see that. We go to the next page 18. And the bar graph of what our products are, and let me talk about those for a second. Treasury management is a growing product that has grown historically. It's cash management, it's treasury management, controlled disbursement, and all other type of cash management techniques for our commercial clients. We've had great success, great penetration on that, and that is a product that is core to a commercial banking establishment, and it is very helpful and constructive as we continue to build the DDA base, which is very important from a profitability perspective. Capital markets really relates to two types of businesses. One, which is a derivative business. We sell our clients derivatives for interest rate. For the most part, it's taking their variable loans and swapping them back to fixed. We then lay those off in the same terms and conditions to the street. What we did there when we came over from LaSalle is we took the sales desk, derivative and FX sales desk, that supported the mid-market clients from an ABN LaSalle perspective. So it isn't like we took the guy that was selling derivatives to Goldman Sachs and repurposed him to sell to the Vienna Hot Club Company, which is a big client of ours. So we have the product and we have the salespeople and the product people that are very used to this. Capital markets has been a good business for us, but the lower, longer scenario does cause clients to think about swapping out their variable rate loan at, based on short LIBOR, back to fixed with the presumption that rates will raise at some point in time. So it's almost like I like to talk about it akin to the guy at the end of the year complaining about with auto insurance, they didn't have a crash that year. So it's about people's appetite for risk, and we feel that we'll get some more traction on that as the discussion of race continues to go on, hopefully sometime next year. Syndication is a growing business for us. Either loans we originate, whether co-lead or lead, and sell into the market, banks of our size, club deals or other deals, or we sell them downstream. This is a way for us to continue to originate. It also allows us to manage hold positions, risk, and also create more velocity with our capital. This is a very good business for us, and we expect that to go forward. Mortgage banking, we have a small mortgage banking business that sells servicing release. So we really operate kind of at the whims of the interest rate and the broad mortgage banking business. Because we sell servicing release, we don't hold MSRs, we don't have to hedge MSRs, so it's a very straightforward business for us. Asset management, which is a business that we recalibrated and reformatted a couple years ago, that is a business that we brought in new leadership and we really want to focus that business on the owners and executives of our key commercial clients. AUM and AUMA continues to build. Profitability will continue to grow as we move forward, but we have high expectations here and as this builds out, but it is a long lead time. Page 19, as we think about the last component of profitability is expenses. I think we've done a pretty good job on managing expenses. Keep in mind, based on the little walkthrough history I gave, that we see this as a seven-year-old company. We don't think there's a lot of cost to take out. There's not a lot of pockets of fat at the moment. So our job and our goal, once we neutralize some of the credit costs, which were a little more prevalent at the back end half of this chart, would be to try to really keep expenses at an absolute dollar kind of where they are. Efficiency ratio at the end of the quarter is about 51-52%, which is pretty good for banks in general, but in our model where we don't have a lot of bricks and mortar, we don't have a lot of branches, we should operate in a low efficiency ratio scenario, and we will continue to do so. We think this type of business broad over a broad horizon should be able to continually be mid-50s or better from an efficiency ratio perspective. But the banking business is a tough business, as we all know, especially in this room. Regulatory pressures and regulatory requirements are always increasing, and we have to stay on top of those. So we will continue to invest in our business, but with an eye towards managing our expenses.
For asset sensitivity, Kevin kind of talked a little bit about it. This slide just trying to illustrate the asset sensitivity of our loan portfolio, with 78% of our loans tied to LIBOR, most of which is LIBOR. Of our loan maturities, about 27% or less than 30% will mature in less than a year. At greater than 1 year, very little, about 16%, will actually have some floors that are in effect, but most do not have floors.
Keep in mind that a commercial loan, while it does have a tenor, a commercial loan can be paid at any time with very little break because they are very low rate loans. From a capital perspective, under the four key metrics of Tier 1 Common, Tier 1 risk base, total risk base, and leverage, we think we're in a very good position from a capital perspective. In fact, as many of you may know, early this quarter, we redeemed $10 million of trust preferred preferred stock, which comes out of our capital base. We think that is a good trade for us. That carried a price tag of 10%. We replaced that with pool funding at about 80 bips. So we like that trade, 10% for 80 bips. That's a good trade for us, and that'll be very constructive for margin and net interest income starting in the first quarter of next year. Capital, we absorb that capital reduction. We believe that capital for us is in a good place. On the other hand, we believe our best use of capital as we sit today is to continue to reinvest it in our business. We have a low dividend rate, and where we sit today, we believe that we'd like to continue to invest in the business and continue to add to the loan book and add to our profitability before we move into the next. And then the last page, and one, just kind of gives you a shorter term on a quarterly basis. So with that, sorry for the little bit of history lesson. With that, Stephen, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. I'll open it up to the floor if anybody has any questions.
Hey, Kevin, looking at your footprint, you've got these biz dev offices in pretty far flung places, and yet you've mentioned quite a few times that most of your business is done in Chicago land, as you put it. What is the goal for these biz dev offices? I mean, are you trying to grow the bank to get critical mass in these other areas or not?
That's a good question. So I think what we want to do is bifurcate those spots. Where we talk about it, this is on slide 4, if we can use this slide. But bank offices our Electric Squad Water, these are offices where we at one time and continue to this day have a full service branch that you can actually walk in and put cash across the teller line. Those historically had a couple of locations, we scaled those down to look a lot like Chicago. Moreover, each one of those offices has, as a leader or a second in command, somebody who worked with us in a LaSalle framework, because at LaSalle we had about 30 nationwide offices. So while, for example, while we love Des Moines, we didn't wake up one morning and say, let's go to Des Moines.
Right.
One of the guys that worked with us was available. He wanted to play, put the band back together, if you will, and so that's why we went there. But these are relatively small offices, high variable cost component, three, four guys or girls, an analyst, a secretary, and they can deal in that market because they're from that market. So we like that. It gives us some diversity geographically. It gives us some diversity from a pricing perspective, and it gives us pure diversity in sectors, because there's some different sectors in some of these other places. It's a low-cost way to develop business out of footprint, but also to get some diversity with people that we've worked with, in many cases, over a long tenure.
Thank you.
Kevin, you talked about the specialty lending groups that you have out there, the construction, the hospital, healthcare. How much of the lending that you do today, or how big of a proportion of the portfolio is outside of those markets where you have the loan production offices or the Chicago market?
I think, for the most part, the businesses that are somewhat national in nature are about healthcare. Healthcare is about 20%, maybe a little higher than that, 26% of the C&I book. And I think that is segregated or separated around where you would imagine they would be based on the most populous states. A big chunk in Illinois, Florida, Texas, California, and probably New Jersey. And that's where we have present. There's probably one or two others, but it kind of distributes itself with some level of correlation to the population of those states. The rest of the businesses are what I would call kind of marginally super regional, kind of the broader upper Midwest and into these footprints. That's the security alarm, construction and engineering. It's probably the more Chicago-centric. And then the ABL business, as I call it, a super regional type business based on kind of our footprint here. And the rest of the business is probably somewhat centric to either Chicago or to the place it's originated. So broadly speaking.
So we keep hearing how Chicago's overbanked. You say you're taking market share. So is that, from the big guys, everyone always picks off, or a lot of little guys starting to really suffer, or where are you taking it?
Well, historically, and we have a slide in here to talk about the 100% loan growth, historically, a lot of the clients followed the client-facing people, their loan officers, or RMs, if you will. So the take-off from the XSL pool was very high originally. Over the last year or two, that's been completely the opposite. That our take-up of new client and new client development has been broad in scope, whether it's from the bigger guys, whether it's to a certain extent we've seen some non-bank financials, and also from some of the medium size. We really don't go into the small because there's really not much out for us. But we've had good success of developing the marketplace and the market share increase from banks our size and above. But it's been broad and diverse, because what you have is you really have a group of guys that are very focused on building their businesses, because we know that given the kind of moderate economic climate, it has gotten better, don't get me wrong, but it's not been tremendously robust. So in order for us to continue to build our business and build our loan book, we have to add clients. So there's been a lot of work done from a marketing perspective, a lot of work done from working with bank referral sources, whether it's lawyers or insurance agents or accountants in the usual way, and build that. You have 150-plus people on the street, client-facing, led by an extremely client-centric leadership team. I can't say that enough. This is a client-focused place, and that develops, and that's how we kind of build that business. Chicago is a heavily banked place. There was no branch banking until the early 80s. There was never a local champion per se. And given the ethnic diversity, the historical ethnic diversity of Chicago, there's a lot of small banks and small savings and loans. There's a lot that are under $300 and $400 million in assets. Very difficult to understand in this day and age how they can play. But we'll see where that takes itself and what opportunities present itself in that regard. But it is competitive. It's always been competitive. But keep in mind that this is the management and the client-facing team that has been at the heart of this market the last 30 years.
Given just kind of a follow-on to that question, working on page 24 of the back of the slide deck, and what kind of struck me is that if we look at the yield on commercial loans, if we look at commercial loans for September, it's 432, and we look at the yield on commercial loans a year ago, it's 432. And I think if I haven't had a chance today to look at it, but I think the LIBOR, 30-day LIBOR, is actually down a little bit every year. Yet the yield on commercial loans is going to be down. So how is the bank going to do that?
So a couple of things, and those are the quarters, of course. I think if we take a look at the 9 month to 9 month, it kind of sees the trend that you expect with around 5 bps. So a couple of things going on. Some of the specialty businesses, healthcare, AVL, alarm, we do get a little better pricing. I'm not going to say we have pricing power. I'm not going to say it's tremendously pricing, but it is better pricing, substantially better pricing. So that's very helpful. Commercial loans do have fees associated with it, and that there's been a robust roll of clients, especially in commercial real estate. About 20% of that book rolls every year moving into permanent financing. If those leave early, that's been helpful from a fee perspective, and that fee goes into NIM, and it helps control these prices to a certain extent. And then last but not least, we have a balance sheet hedging program that we swap the cash flow from our clients' variable price at fixed for our own book. That contributes over the last 6, 7, 8 quarters, somewhere between $1.5 million and $2 million pre-tax a quarter into that interest income. So those things have also, and that swap impact relates only to commercial loans, because that's what we're hedging as a reference portfolio. So some pricing on our specialties, loan fees have been helpful at the right times, and also our hedging program buttresses off that yield number. X that, we do see pricing compression go down, not too dissimilar, since you were looking at it, to the next page, where we see the 9 month to 9 month where the commercial yields actually went down from 437 to 432.
Thank you.
All participants are now in interactive talk mode.
We'll open up to any questions from the outside. And while we're waiting for that, maybe a question on salary and comp. You touched on this a little bit, and I appreciate the information you gave about kind of a mid-50s efficiency ratio. That's a helpful context. Not sure how that relates as far as potential benefit with the higher rates down the road, but a kind of a target somewhere where you'd like to be sometime in the future. But given where you are today, and kind of the existing infrastructure that you have in place, and keep in mind that if I look back from 2012 to kind of what we're forecasting for 2014, the salary and comp line, it's going to be up about maybe 4.5% over that two-year period. And I use 2012 because the loan growth in 2012 was pretty strong, similar to 2014, or what we expect in 2014, whereas 2013 was down a little bit. So I'm kind of using those two numbers kind of as a similar bonus the costs associated with those 2 years in the growth. But can the existing expense base support a much higher asset platform?
Yeah, I would say the answer to that question is that I think we do have some capacity in the platform. From a back office perspective and a front office perspective, I've been saying this for a couple of years, but I think that capacity is not what it was a year ago. We actually built the book and built more clients into it. All that being said, a lot or some portion of the increase in the salary and employee benefit line has clearly been in an increased accrual for incentive comp as a result of, quite frankly, gotten a lot better, both from a financial perspective and some of the non-financial metrics we have in our performance against plan. So that's been very helpful for us. I think our goal would be to manage expenses, obviously, right? But also to continue to make good choices about investing in our business. About within the last couple of weeks, we made an announcement that we've created a technology vertical. We brought in someone who leads that was the upper Midwest or the Chicago representative of Silicon Valley, which we all know is a fairly tech-centric organization. So I think that'll help us build. But instead of bringing in 20 guys or 30 guys or girls, it's a leader and will backfill. We're doing some other things from an efficiency or an effectiveness position where we are going to make investments, but they're moderate investments. And here's an example. Over the last 3 years, we've had a training program where we're bringing people off of campus with, you know, undergrad or grad business background, put them through a 9-month training program, rotate them through. Now, you might say, Kevin, interesting, but a kid 9 months out of school, I'm not sure it's going to make an impression. It'd make a difference. I would argue that when that young person can sit down and be an assistant to one of our client-facing people and then allow that client-facing guy to get out of the office 10 or 15% more of his time calling on clients, that's going to make has some real value to us in a relatively modest cost perspective. So those are the type of things that we're trying to do to manage expenses while still investing in the business, but creating and trying to kind of continue this momentum that we see that we've had, I think, since 12. So it's tough. Like I said before, we live in a complicated world. Banks, as our broker dealers and investment firms, are highly regulated, and we have to make sure we keep up with that and do what we need to do to make sure that one of our many constituents is well pleased. But I think we're well served where we are now. We've made some strategic investments back a number of years ago in infrastructure and in data analytics, which I think will be very helpful. But managing expenses will be a key.
Okay. Any questions from the outside?
He just told me I get your job. It wasn't a joke. Oh, was it? It's just saying, I've just told him what the answer
is. Any questions from the outside?
Do you know if I have the
answer? Do I want to make sure your phone is muted?
Yeah,
all right, with that, any other questions from... All right, with that, we will say thank you, Kevin.
And thank you, Stephen, and thanks, Davidson, for hosting this. Enjoyed our visit to the Northwest. We'll see some of our investors and some of you in Seattle tomorrow.
Have a good day, everyone.
Glad to have you here.
Your conference is ending now. As requested by the host, please hang.